Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Had I listened to all those people, we don't have this conversation right now.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
Cleveland, Ohio. He is the only professional wrestler with cerebral palsy, the handicap hero, Gregory Iron.
Prepare yourself. Put on your spandex. Lace up your boots. Wrap your wrists. Hide your razor blade. Head to gorilla position.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm a big fan of the beard.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm getting to the point where it's like, it's, you know, the grays are coming in, and I usually don't grow it this long, but I'm doing this angle at GCW with like Ricky Shane Page and these guys, and it's like, I feel like I have to be committed to it now because everyone looks very rugged and punk rock, and like I'm very not. So I'm like, I gotta keep this. I'm very new metal from the early 2000s, you know. So I gotta look the part, I guess, you know.
Are you putting time into grooming it though?
Not myself. So here's the thing. So like usually when the beard gets long, I get lazy and pissed because like I don't know exactly how to trim it like without like a electric razor. So I've been going to this barber where I'm like, can you like trim my beard? And also, I'm not paying for the haircuts either. So like I literally drive to Chicago to wrestle, and there's this girl there who likes me. So I'm like, she's at a barber shop. So I'm like, can you cut my hair for free? And she's like, sure. And then I'm like, can you trim my beard for free? She's like, yeah.
Oh, like, right. Yeah. See, that's and it's great. You find a barber that you can trust, because I've had that before, Greg, where I've gone to and I've asked them to do my beard as well, and they've pretty much got rid of it, and I've had to go no. And you probably is when I don't know when you have that. Have you ever had a bad haircut when they've shown you how's your hair and you've gone, this is a terrible haircut, because you can't physically, I find, whether it's a British thing, I don't know, you can't do it. When someone gives you a bad haircut and they go, is that all right for you? You always go, yeah, that's great, cheers.
But inside you're like dying, because it's like, you know, like I'm like, especially now, like I've been thinning in the front for a while, and it's not like incredibly apparent, but like it needs to be cut a certain way to where it's like, I don't look like a balding freak. So I'm like, you know, there's been times where it's like, yeah, and I'm just like, oh God, I got to wear this hat for sure every day for the next 3 weeks until this grows back. But usually I actually have Gargano's mom cut my hair, but like she's very, she's not very modern with the hairstyles, which is why it's nice that this chick in Chicago can cut my hair, because she can only do it like a couple certain ways, but she can't do like fades or whatever the crap kids are doing these days. So it's just whatever, as long as it's free, I guess.
When you said that, I had the image of Johnny Gargano's mum putting a bowl on your head and cutting round it.
No bowl, but I'm usually surrounded by several cats roaming around.
So what we're going to do today, Gregory, is we're going to send you on a desert island, and we're going to give you a DVD, burn you a disc, because we're in the 90s. We're going to burn you a disc of your three favorite wrestling matches of all time. Stuff that you can watch over and over again whilst you're on said island. So what's your first match going to be then, Gregory?
Oh, boy. It's such a tough choice. I feel like... I've always been a big WWE, WWF kid. And sometimes, if I can be honest, lately, past few years, the product is a little tough to watch at times, especially being a grown man and with so much content out there to consume. It's sometimes hard to find time for Raw and SmackDown and all that stuff. If I was a 13-year-old kid, though, I would be in heaven with all the content out there, right?
Gosh, absolutely.
I don't know. I've always been like diehard WWE, so I feel like these three matches are going to end up being WWE matches. And there's so many like options and choices. I mean, when I think of like some of my favorite guys, obviously one of my first favorite wrestlers was Hulk Hogan, which is a wrestler that I don't wrestle like at all. Now that I'm a performer and I've like understood psychology and stuff, the only thing that I really have taken from Hulk Hogan is the fact that, which has helped me a lot, he didn't do a million moves. And coming up, I was training with Johnny Gargano, and a lot of the times it would be just Gargano and I at training, and there would always be this pressure of, I need three new moves this week because Johnny Gargano has three new moves, right? And then I would do three of the crappiest moves of all time that I couldn't perform, like a terrible drop kick. Which, so if you go back and look at very, very old Gregory Iron stuff, if you see me do a drop kick, it's the worst thing you've ever seen. And you'll notice that Greg doesn't do that anymore. Because one day I remember Johnny saying, like, Hulk Hogan is like your favorite wrestler. Maybe you should not do 100 moves like Hulk Hogan, you know? And I said, oh, and then all of a sudden it made sense, because I also love guys like Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho so much that I kind of thought to myself, well, if I could just take transitions and movements and storytelling aspects from like Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels or Kurt Angle, then maybe that could help me find my own style, and then find like the 15 or 20 moves that I do really good, kind of like Hulk Hogan, and stick with that. So as a sidebar, all that rambling, Hulk Hogan is one of my favorites. I feel like there might be a Hulk Hogan match in here for sure. Then as I got older, my favorite became Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I think that was because I was a angsty young teenager, angry at the world for my situation in life with my disability and stuff, and not understanding like why I was given in my mind this curse. But now I look at this as a blessing. But at the time, you know, Stone Cold was like, you know, all about being against authority, and it was like the world versus Stone Cold, or the WWF versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. I feel like sometimes like that was my mindset in my stupid teenage mind, like it's the world against Greg, you know. So I really connected with Stone Cold. But then, of course, as I just mentioned, we have those characters like Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, these technical wrestlers that I really related to, and I really got into their style. So that being said, if I had to pick the first match, it's a match that I always watch no problem. And I almost feel like it gets glossed over because of how good their feud was in 2008. People forget about the original contest. I think I'm going to say Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 19.
Better than you, Sean.
A man doesn't hide underneath the ring and jump another man from behind.
I'm more charismatic than you, Sean.
A man looks the other man in the eyes.
My skills have surpassed yours. I want to end your career at WrestleMania.
Chris Jericho, get ready, because I'm coming to fight.
Why have you gone for the 2003 match?
Because it was the first, and I remember just the general excitement that I felt going into that match. And WrestleMania 19 in general, I feel like, you know, people always go to WrestleMania 17 as like the premier WrestleMania card, for good reason. I mean, it's a great show. But I feel like WrestleMania 19, arguably, is the best WrestleMania when you really look at the show from top to bottom. I mean, you had, Brock and Kurt, Hulk and McMahon, Rock and Austin, of course, Jericho and Shawn Michaels. I just felt like there was something on the show for everyone. If you ignore, well, I mean, the lingerie pillow fight was on there, or the Miller Lite cat girl fight was on there. Mm-hmm. Uh, but, when we ignore that, even the match with Undertaker versus A-Train and Big Show was really good, I feel, for what it was. But yeah, in general, I don't know, Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, like the build to that was almost unexpected, because the rumor online at the time was like, you know, Shawn wasn't going to do too many more matches after his feud with Triple H. And like, we were lucky that we got not only his return at SummerSlam 2002, but then you had the Elimination Chamber, and then we got the 2 out of 3 falls, 3 stages of hell match at Armageddon 2002. So when we were getting this surprise, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels feud, and then when they showed like the side-by-side images of like how Jericho was basically dressing like Shawn Michaels when he first started, and how much he idolized him and stuff, and they did the spot together where they started out in the 2003 Royal Rumble at 1 and 2. It was really a nice setup going into that match, and I feel like with the atmosphere in Seattle that night at WrestleMania, and just the storytelling of like them being able to match each other hold for hold, and the spot that sticks out to me is Jericho going for the super kick, and at the time he was doing that Jericho juke and jive. So instead of doing the yellow stomp like Jericho or like Shawn Michaels, he does the juke and jive and then hits him with the super kick. It was just a great storytelling match, and then afterwards you think you're going to get that hug, and you know, like, oh, you know what, they have each other's respect, and Jericho starts crying, and then he knees him in the nuts, and it's just a beautiful match. And I think because 2008 was so good, we oftentimes forget that we got that first encounter in 2003 and how special that really was, and kind of laid the groundwork for what we got in 2008, because it was clear that Jericho and Michaels had incredible chemistry.
Where were you when you watched that first time round?
You know, that was one of the so for a long time I didn't watch a WrestleMania live again. From the last WrestleMania that I watched live was WrestleMania 10. So my grandma started ordering me WrestleMania's WWF pay-per-views, starting with WrestleMania 6. I was very young at the time. So then I watched 7, 8, 9, and 10 live. My grandma passed away in 1995. So when she passed, I didn't have cable. So no one was really ordering the pay-per-views for me anymore. So if I had to watch a pay-per-view, I'd find a friend's house, or I would get like a $10 allowance every week for doing chores, and I would spend my allowance on bribing kids at school. I would give them $5 to tape the pay-per-view for me if it was on a Sunday, or $5 if they could tape both Raw and Nitro for me. Because Raw in the States, I don't know how it was over there, but it came on at 9 o'clock, and then at 11 there would be a replay of Nitro, so you could still record basically the live version of Nitro. So I'd give a kid a 6-hour tape and be like, hey, just tape them both on me on there for $5. So I would always get the WrestleManias like the day after, but in this case, for some reason, I didn't watch WrestleMania 19 the day after or anything. I mean, I was a grown man at this point, the DVD came out. So when the DVD came out like 3 months later, I was super stoked. And I think actually that was the first wrestling DVD I ever bought, was WrestleMania 19, and had like a buttload of extras. I think it had that.
It's bad, but the one thing I remember is they had all the Miller Lite Catfight Girl adverts on the bonus DVD. There was plenty more, but the first thing that I came to was, oh, they had all the Miller Lite adverts.
So I didn't watch that until like 3 months later, but like I felt like it was worth the wait. Like I said, not just for Jericho and Shawn, but I mean, that whole card was really good. And actually, as a little sidebar, you know, I did Stone Cold's podcast like 3 times now, and one of the first times I was over there, we recorded an episode where, ironically, much like we're doing now, we talked about our favorite matches, and I just kind of brought up you know, the series of matches between Austin and Rock, and I asked him in what order does he think he enjoys those matches, because for me as a fan, I would say it goes 17, 19, and 15. And for him, he put 19 last. But at the time, Steve didn't even watch. He had never watched back the WrestleMania 19 match because he said it was garbage. It was garbage to him. And I thought to myself, like, well, that's crazy, but we're our own biggest critics as performers, right? And I said, like, you should go back and watch that match. And then in my head, for some reason, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm building this friendship with Stone Cold Steve Austin. it's my personal goal to watch this match from WrestleMania 19 with him for the first time, right? And so I've stayed in contact with Steve, and I actually planned, I went to LA right before, what was it, this last October. I went to LA and I wanted to meet up with Steve and do a podcast with him, but he wasn't around. And this son of a bitch, right before I went out there, I see him post online for one episode of the podcast that he went back and watched the match with WrestleMania 19 by himself. And I was like, you bastard. Like, all childhood Greg wanted was to just watch this iconic match between him and The Rock together for the first time. This bastard just went and watched it on his own. But
you still can.
We can, and it would still be great.
It's not the same, but you still can.
We were supposed to watch him and Triple H from Three Stages of Hell from No Way Out 2001. And I don't know if you could tell, but I know a lot of useless WWF trivia. You know, I spent a lot of time not talking to girls and watching a lot of wrestling.
You're my spirit animal, I believe, sir.
I remember I did a little bit of additional research so I could, like, really be prepared for this podcast with Austin. And, like, I already knew I could set him up for his own stories, but I wanted to be, like, extra prepared, right? And so, like, day of, we go to do the podcast, and he just starts talking about something else, and then, like, it sucked. Like, it was, like, unusable stuff that we were saying, because, like, he went into some rambling about how he hates talking about politics or religion, and then we start this podcast by talking about politics or religion, and I'm like, I don't know what to say. I'm not a political guy. I'm not very religious. And so, like, it just became awkward. He's like, well, this podcast sucks. And I'm like, well, yeah, but, like, I thought we were going to watch Three Stages of Hell, man. And he was just like, I'm actually dog shit. I hate it. It's garbage. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you're the one that suggested we watch it. He's like, I hate it. It's a botch fest. And I'm like, that's one of the best matches of all time. Like you remember what I'm talking about, right?
I remember it in a really long match, and it was the one where they both hit each other with equal plunder at the very end and collapsed on top of each other, but Triple H fell last, so he won.
Yes, it was a great match, and, like, he's the one that suggested we watch it. And then, like, when it came time, he's like, no, we ain't watching it. He's like, next time you come over, you know, we'll watch it together. I'll show you everything that's wrong with it. I'm just like, I'm in my head, I'm like, okay, but I'm like, you're crazy for thinking that's not a good match.
Yes, sir.
Park over in front of the house.
I have a hard time parallel parking.
You can't parallel park inside there?
I'm the worst.
This is fine. This works for you.
I'll just take a lot.
I mean, just for record, I don't know if you guys are rolling sound or not, but you're 9 minutes late.
I did not mean to be late, sir.
It's a disrespect.
I apologize.
Not only I've got probably 20 years seniority in the professional wrestling business, but I'm a global icon and a national treasure. To be disrespected like this by you is reprehensible. Now, you can come in and we can do a podcast, or I can send you a little ass down the road in this red sedan.
Now, hold on. Let me point something out. I have several voicemails from you where you say that you look up to me, that I'm an inspiration to you.
All that's true, Gregory. You need some attitude. I was the king of the attitude era. Can I not live in the past a little bit? Parker, come on in. All right.
I am in awe of the beautiful bromance you and Steve Austin have. How did it come about?
It's one of those things where sometimes I feel this rings true a lot of aspects of life. Like sometimes you got to go through really terrible crap to get to really good crap. If it's even possible for there to be good crap out there, I mean, like, you don't want to deal with smelly poop, but you know what I mean in general. So I went through a very terrible breakup at the end of 2017. I was in, like, this 5-year relationship with this girl, and I thought it was going to be forever. And it was one of those things where we just weren't on the same page communication wise. And I thought it was okay that I was always on the road and wrestling. And, like, we both very much wanted the same things in terms of, like, we both wanted a house at some point and a family and blah, blah, blah. But, like, this chick was very simplistic, and she wanted that stuff, like, right now. And that's really all she wanted. That was her dream. And I wanted those things, but I wanted it in this very psychotic way of, like, beating my body up and being on the road and, like, making money off of wrestling. Because I didn't want to, she was a paralegal. I'm a pro wrestler. I don't want to do something for the rest of my life that I hate, right? So there's this almost, like, fear that if I don't do this now, I'm going to be saddled doing something that I hate. And I feel like, and I don't know how you feel, when you do something you don't like, I feel like, you have this animosity and anger towards the world, and I didn't want to like one day take that out on my girlfriend slash wife, if that's what she became, or my family. Like, I just want to be happy with what I'm doing and be able to provide for said family like that. And so there's no communication in that regard. We broke up, and it was hard. And I remember I had this moment where I felt really, really low and down about the situation. And this was months removed. And I was texting Candace LeRae, and, you know, cause I'm good friends with her, cause obviously she's married to Johnny, and, I was just feeling really down about myself. And she said, you know, you should, reach out to Joey Ryan, and just go out to LA for bar wrestling, and, just stay out there for a couple of days and just get your head clear and do something that you like, wrestling, you know? I said, I don't want to bug Joey. And then 5 minutes later, she texted me back and said, I text Joey, you're booked for bar wrestling. So I was like, okay, thank you. So that made it easy. And then literally the next week, I was in Buffalo, New York, and I'm really close with Andy Williams at this point from Every Time I Die, and of course, Butcher and the Blade on AEW now. And Andy was talking to me, and he goes, you know, I just did Stone Cold's podcast, and he was sharing the experience with me, how cool Steve was and everything. And he goes, you know, if you were ever in LA, I bet you I could set up for you to go on Steve's podcast, because the producer is from Buffalo, and he knows who you are, and he likes your story. And I said, I'm literally going to be in LA in a couple months. And so it got set up, and it's one of those things where you don't believe it until you're actually there. And I got an Uber that weekend for bar wrestling, and I was so nervous pulling up to Steve's house, because I don't know, it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? And I have all these thoughts going through my mind, and I'm thinking about my whole life as a wrestler, and I'm thinking, you know, if I just have one moment in conversation where like Stone Cold Steve Austin can agree with something that I say, I feel like that's a victory for me. Because I don't know, sometimes I get down on like my psychology and stuff, and I think like, am I like, I don't know, is there something wrong with me as a performer, like, and all this stuff. And when I pull up to the house, I see Austin outside his house in mismatched camo and New Balance shoes, and he's just wearing these stupid little sunglasses, and he just puts one finger up in the air, just saying, like, basically, hello, I'm Steve Austin. You know what I mean? Like, I'm right here, as if I wasn't going to recognize him. And I just started giggling, nervous, and I'm just like, what the heck is my life right now? And I get out, and I introduce myself, and like, one of the first things he says, like, I've been watching a lot of your work, kid. You got a hell of a body. And I thought to myself, well, this is a victory. You know, if this all goes downhill from there, like Stone Cold Steve Austin just said, I have a hell of a body. And it was just one of those things where the second we sat down, it just felt like I knew him my whole life. And I guess in a lot of ways I have, you know what I mean? But like, it just felt so natural. And within like, you know, an hour, we were making fun of each other. And we started doing this bit where I'm confusing him for Bill Goldberg. And it's just, it made no sense. And it was so funny, because the next weekend I'm on a show with Bushwhacker Luke, and I was so nervous to talk to Bushwhacker Luke, but I'm thinking to myself, I just hung out with Stone Cold Steve Austin at his house, and it wasn't even hard. Like, what is wrong with you? So like, life is weird, but everything, as generic as it sounds, happens for a reason. And Steve told me that, you know, after the fact, like, I was like, I'd gone on a good first date, and I was like, do I text him now and thank him for everything? I couldn't do it. And that night after the meeting, before I went to bed, my phone vibrates and I get a text from Stone Cold, and he says like, hey man, really enjoyed meeting you. If you ever need anything, give me a holler. And I really took that to heart. I thought to myself, if the arguably the best wrestler of all time is going to extend an offer to a friendship and help me, I want to take advantage of that. So I just started calling Steve, and because he's an old man, if I don't answer the phone, he'll leave a voicemail. So sometimes I purposely don't answer. So then he leaves a voicemail talking trash about me. So now I have like these voicemails where, you know, the second he saves them, I forward them to my email so I can have them forever, because it's just like, again, it makes no sense. Like, why is Stone Cold calling my phone and threatening me and challenging me to wrestling matches? It's just been one of the coolest things in my life, and it'll never make any sense, but I'm just going to roll with it.
Didn't you have a similar call from Steve Austin, David Arquette, and RJ City recently?
This
where they rang you and just berated you.
Yeah, this past week they called, and I wasn't going to pick up. Because I was just gonna like, I'll see what the voicemail is, right? And Ricky Shane Page is my roommate, and so he's just like, pick up the phone, and I was like, no, I'm not, I'm just gonna leave a voicemail. And he's just like, he's like, what if it's something important? I'm like, oh no, what if it is something important? And then of course I pick up the phone. He goes, I heard you, dumb bastard. Why'd you pick up the phone? We're gonna leave you a voicemail. And I was like, oh, I can hang up. He's like, no, don't hang up now. Just, you know, now we're gonna talk to you, you piece of garbage. And so like they just, he just starts berating me, and then he said something to the effect of, you know, I don't know why, though. I like you for some reason. I said, Steve, I like you, too. And I miss your sight. I miss your smell. I miss your taste. And he said, stop talking like that. There's other people in the room. I got David Arquette. Like, I'm just like, and then David Arquette's in the background, who I've only met briefly once, but he's just like, love you, Greg. I've heard so many great things about you. Can't wait to get to know you better. And I'm just thinking to myself, what is life? This is stupid. This is dumb.
I think away from that, I think the big question that people who are listening to this will now want to know, and I'm desperate to ask it, what was Bushwhacker Luke like?
he was fine. I took a picture with him, but like, we didn't have much of a conversation. What a lad. He's definitely as cool as Stone Cold Steve Austin, I'll tell you that right now. Oh.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Your second match for your DVD, sir.
Well, I feel like with all the Stone Cold talk, I got to pick like a Stone Cold match, right? I always out of that series of matches with The Rock, my favorite is WrestleMania 17, and I do really love that match. However, and it feels really generic to say this, and it sucks that we're still going with WrestleMania matches here, but WrestleMania is a big part of wrestling, right? And sometimes it does breed some of the most iconic matches of all time. I guess I'm going to say WrestleMania 13, Stone Cold and Bret Hart.
They say your ego is your enemy. What happened to you? There's only one solution. To awaken from this nightmare, you must defeat him. To regain your life and resume your legacy, you must make him beg for mercy as you squeeze the will from his bones. But what if Stone Cold Steve Austin wins? What becomes of Bret the Hitman Hart then?
Obviously, that's famous for the double turn. You know, I often talk about this now. Obviously, blood is banned in wrestling, right? Can't bleed anymore or whatever. And I get why, but I've actually talked to Austin about this too. It's one of those things where it's like you go back and watch the match and the story those guys told. And WrestleMania 13 is not a very good WrestleMania, but that match, I think in a lot of ways, saved that pay-per-view. And you go back and you – obviously the most iconic moment of that match is the blood pouring out of Stone Cold's face while he's in the sharpshooter. And I often talk about the importance of blood in the aspect that, like, it really changes the dynamic of a match and really creates this emotional investment that, like, if you don't have that blood, it's not there otherwise. And if you go back in time and if for some reason there was this no blood policy, which actually I think there was, and the blood wasn't planned in that match, I'm pretty sure they just kind of did it anyways. But if you take that element of blood out of that match, there's a big piece of that story that's missing. And you don't get that iconic moment where the blood is flowing down Austin's face and that tight shot of him in the sharpshooter. And it really changes the drama involved with him passed out. So I get why guys aren't allowed to blade anymore on TV, but man, it really amps up the drama when it comes to storytelling and a match. And like, there's this anxiety that it creates almost like as a viewer. Like I know me as a kid, like, watching that match, and like I wanted to see Austin break free of that sharpshooter, even though I was a big Bret Hart fan. But I could feel something changing, and in that moment, it's like you felt this desperation for Stone Cold and that want for him to get to the rope. And there's that moment where, for a second, he does break the sharpshooter almost, and Bret almost falls off, but then he cinches it back up, and then you know Austin pass out. And I mean, it's just so iconic. And how do you get much better than that match? And essentially, that match, in a lot of ways, made Stone Cold Steve Austin. A lot of people point to King of the Ring, June 23rd, 1996. Again, I know that off the top of my head, very pathetic. But I think when you talk in terms of matches, WrestleMania 13 made Stone Cold Steve Austin. What do you think?
All I'm thinking of is, as you say, that moment when he's leaning up and the blood's pouring down his mouth. His eyes are shut, and it's almost like he's bellowing like a wounded animal. And it was the fact that, you know what, it's one of those matches where there was a guest referee, but it was so unimportant to what was going on. Like, because everyone forgets, oh, Ken Shamrock was referee, and he suplexes Bret Hart at the end, but people forget that because the double turn that we saw was just so powerful. The whole idea of him not tapping out but passing out was really important. There was a show in Blackpool on Sunday where we referenced that and said in the main event the guy should have passed out rather than tapped out, because you don't do it very often, but when you do it, it's impactful. That felt was a watershed moment. It was the best match of the night. And what's funny is as well, And I'm sure this is the case, and you know, you've got the direct line to Steve, so you'll probably know. That match wasn't meant to happen until just a month or so before, because wasn't this the show where we were meant to get Bret Shawn too?
Yep, and you had that whole situation where Shawn lost his smile, and they did the Final Four match at the Final Four pay-per-view. And originally that was just supposed to be for the number one contendership for who was going to go to WrestleMania because of the controversy at the 97 Rumble. But of course, once Shawn dropped out the week before, now all of a sudden this Final Four match becomes for the championship. And then they do the thing where Bret Hart wins the belt. The next night he drops it to Sid via, I think, help from Steve. And that sets up Steve and Bret. And then, of course, you have Sid and Undertaker, which not a very memorable match in terms of match quality, but it was the first time that Taker won the belt since Survivor Series 91. And in a lot of ways, you know, if you were following the company at the time, Undertaker was becoming such a mythical and iconic figure. It was nice that we get to experience that moment, almost like Undertaker had really earned his stripes and he deserved this shot no matter how long it was going to last at the WWF Championship at that point in 1997. So it was pretty cool.
I think you assume as well that, like they say, like the double turn happened, but then Steve kind of drops back, not drops back, but he becomes, because then after that you have Cold Day in Hell where you have Undertaker and Steve Austin, and Steve Austin's very much ostensibly the heel again. So there's obviously a little bit that's like, it's not like he's suddenly like the beer drinking rattlesnake the night after. There is still that sort of transition period still to come before we get there. But I think people do forget that. With that particular match, though, with yourself, was that another one that you'd bribe somebody to tape?
No. You know what? That was one of those situations where I actually didn't see that match until, I want to say, like, 2 years later. It wasn't until I saw that match in its entirety. Like, obviously, I'd seen that iconic moment played again and again and again in commercials and stuff, but I got that on WWF home video like 2 years ago, or two years later, rather. I think maybe for like an Easter present or something. Like, it was a stupid excuse for me to get a wrestling tape. All I can think about, like, it, and that's one of those things too, where I think it's lost now in this day and age, where you know, everything's on the network or you can get everything streaming, is like going to the store and having that emotional investment and commitment in buying like a tape or a DVD. Like when you go in and like you see the packaging, you're like, oh God, this is it. And you pick it up and you examine it, and then you read the back and you get excited, and then you buy it, and then you take it home, and like you're anticipating putting it in the VCR or the DVD player. And like kids nowadays, they'll never understand that feeling. But like I had that feeling when I finally got that WrestleMania 13, because it was like this holy grail, you know, that I only heard about, I never saw. And yeah, there's a bit of disconnect in this day and age, especially with streaming, because it's like there's no emotional investment. If I start watching something on Netflix or on the WWE Network and it sucks 5 minutes in, I'm just like, this sucks, I'm going to turn it off, I'll never think about it again. But like when you buy something or you rent something, back when we were coming up, you know, like you had to be committed to it.
You spend far too much time now just cycling through to find something to watch. More time spent looking for something to watch than you do actually watching anything. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I used to buy a lot of VHS tapes as well for wrestling. And I remember it was a day out with my dad, and he said, you can go, but we'll buy you a wrestling video. And it was WrestleMania 13. On the back, on the one I had, it said it was a 6-man tag. It was, and it said on the back, The Nation Domination versus Ahmed Johnson and Friends. Did yours say that? Because mine, I seem to remember saying it. I remember thinking, I don't know who his friends are. Not in a bad way, but it was just, it didn't advertise the Legion of Doom for some reason.
I'm going to have to go and look that up now, because the copy that I got, they came out with that WrestleMania 1-14.
Oh, that anthology thing!
They came out with a box set, so label that I had had different packaging and everything. But I'm pretty sure it didn't say "and friends" on the back, because that would actually, I don't think it had the match card at all. I think it had like those anthology tapes just kind of had like a paragraph or two about like what kind of happened on the event. So
yeah, they do. Yeah, it's funny. I remember having that same anthology. It's weird how I remember they all had lovely decorative front and backs, with the exception of WrestleMania 15, which was just in like a white case. Obviously, whether they rushed it out or not, they just stuck that in there. I randomly remembered that. That's a lovely memory. I want to talk about your podcast. I want to talk about Iron On Wrestling.
Yeah.
Because you've now entered the world of podcasting as well. What made you decide to start your own, basically?
Dealing with Stone Cold after the fact, we were talking about the feedback that we got on the couple episodes that we did together. We did one just about my career, and then we kind of impromptu did a podcast where we talked about our favorite matches and our favorite wrestlers. And Steve told me that all the feedback that he was getting from people close to him was they felt like I could be interviewing Steve. And he said, like, you know, have you ever thought about doing your own podcast? And I was like, I don't know. Everyone has a podcast. It's very oversaturated. Like, who am I? You know, blah, blah, blah. Steve kind of planted those seeds in my brain. And then this past year, 2019, was the first year that I took a gamble on me, basically just wrestling and motivational speaking and working without the net of I've always had like a 9-to-5 job, right? And it had insurance and all that stuff. And it was one of those things where another situation with a girl that I really cared about and was in a relationship with, she sort of pushed me to be like, why don't you pad your wrestling schedule and pad your motivational speaking schedule? And maybe you should consider doing this podcast thing to maybe try to monetize that. You'll have so much time for it. Like, just take a gamble on you. It was nice that she gave me that push. We're not together currently. And I think I would have had to do that regardless, but, you know, having her by my side to be like, just do it. I was like, all right, I guess I'll do it. And it was just one of those things where someone invested in the podcasting equipment for me. So I said, well, I guess I don't have a choice now. I'm going to do it. And I didn't know what the format was going to be, but I just kind of went with the idea that, you know, I'm not going to say that I can fill his shoes at all, but, you know, I've always been close with Colt Cabana, and I reached out to Colt and asked him for advice and input. And I just feel like since Colt has changed his format, and he really shaped the wrestling podcast industry for so many guys, I feel like maybe there's this hole that needs to be filled for some people that enjoyed that content from Colt, where it's just basically a wrestler talking to another wrestler about road stories and psychology. And I figured, maybe I could do have that be a big part of the podcast, which it is now. Like I co-host with my buddy Aaron Bauer, who was a longtime commentator in the Midwest United States for a long time, and we just have a good chemistry, and we kind of set up these interviews in the sense that whatever I recorded on the road with someone, I'll pick a subject matter or something that we talked about within the interview, and we'll kind of expand upon it to start the show, maybe talk about my weekend, past and upcoming, and then we kind of go into the interview, and it's just nice to sit down and talk with my friends, some of which that I've actually got to know in a little better through the podcast, like Danhausen and Effie, just to be able to sit down with Gargano and share our psychology stories together that we've only talked about in private, to be able to kind of expand upon that and record it so that everyone can hear like our thoughts on like how you tell a story in a wrestling match. I think that's pretty great to be able to get that opportunity to do that. And I'm very proud in this day and age that, like, you know, wrestling, I don't want to say kayfabe is dead, because there are these magical moments where we can still help people suspend their disbelief, but people are very much smarter to how everything is put together. And I'm very proud that despite my situation and with cerebral palsy, technically having brain damage, like I'm proud of the fact that I figured out how to structure a match in a way, and it has this artistic integrity about it that I love, and I want to be able to share that with people and tell them, you know, that part in the match you saw, like I thought of that, you know, like it's no different than like an artist in their painting, and like, oh, that part right there, I thought of it, that at this moment because of this. It's nice to be able to say, I did this move here, and we did this storytelling element at this moment because of this, because that's how I create my art, and I want to share that with the world. I want to be able to tell people, this is how I put it together. It's pretty nice.
One of the people who you've had on the podcast recently is somebody who you said was very much inspiration to you, and that was Zach Gowen.
When I first met Zach in 2006 when I was starting, he was very mean to me.
It seems to be a recurring theme where, like, you make friends for life who are just horrible to you.
Yeah, pretty much. And so when I met Zach, like, he was the reason why I thought I could be a professional wrestler, you know, seeing him on WWE TV. And I did an indie show with him, and I was like 3 months in. I tried to pick his brain, and he just kind of brushed me off. And it sucked because I, you know, it was one of those things where I guess you never want to meet your heroes. And we ended up a few years later crossing paths again, and it was like I met a different guy, and it turned out that he had a really bad drug problem when I met him the first time. And also, you know, he was younger, he was like 20, 21 at the time, a little bit more immature. And basically, once my story started to come to prominence in 2011 due to a thing I did with CM Punk in Colt Cabana during the Summer of Punk, where my story went viral and Punk as the WWE champion publicly endorsed me in Chicago. As I was doing more podcasts because of that, Zach listened to a podcast that I did, I believe it was Cabana, where I kind of mentioned meeting Zach and how he was a dick to me. And that prompted Zach to reach out to me and said, like, yo, I'm sorry. I was a different person. I can't believe I treated you that way. I didn't realize the impact that I had on people during my time in WWE. And he said, you know, if ever I could make it up to you, and because we live fairly close together, he lives in Detroit, I live in Cleveland, which is like 2.5 hours away from each other, he's like, maybe we could start doing a tag team thing or something. And I never thought Zach owed me an apology, but it was pretty cool that he reached out to me and did that. And promoter in Ohio started booking us as a team, and it was kind of off to the races for us in terms of that, and we started getting more bookings together. And it was one of those things where we realized that the sum of the parts was greater than the parts individually. And we make these even stronger connections with fans and people with disabilities, seeing that here's this guy with one leg teaming with this guy with one good arm, and what he can't do with two arms, Zach can do with two arms, and what Zach can't do with two legs, Greg can do with two legs. And it's just, you know, our superpowers combined to make this unique and interesting tag team that, quite frankly, some able-bodied tag teams have a hard time keeping up with us. And again, it's something we take a lot of pride in, that like we have risen to the occasion, and we don't rest on the fact that we're two disabled wrestlers. We continually go out there each and every weekend to prove that we're just two good pro wrestlers. And for a few minutes, we're going to make you forget, oh, that guy has one arm and that guy has one leg. This is pretty impressive, actually. So it's a pretty cool deal.
Whilst your initial experience with Zach wasn't great, it didn't shape how you are with other people, because I've seen, like, through Reddit conversations that you're very much a beacon of hope. If there's anybody listening today who may be in a similar situation, you can say some words of encouragement that you can pass on to them.
I think the thing that I always say over the past couple of years is, and I think it rings true, I think about some of the best moments of my life and how initially I was so scared to pursue those moments based on things that people told me. Because my whole life, having a disability, particularly when it started to get in this unrealistic dream of being a pro wrestler, people just told me, you can't do it, that's stupid, blah, 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 you got one arm. Whatever the case may be, had I listened to all those people, you know, we don't have this conversation right now. And just having this conversation with you is a surreal life moment that, like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I ever really believed it. It was something that could happen. I think when I became a wrestler, I wanted to prove people wrong and say, you don't think I can do this? Well, F you. I'm going to do it anyways, right? As the story progresses, though, and I start to interact with people and I realize the impact of just being an open book and sharing my story openly and freely, like not only my disability, but, you know, dealing with my mom who had a drug addiction and the physical and mental abuse that I dealt with as a child. I didn't realize that just being able to share that with people helped them realize that they're not alone. And that's a pretty powerful thing. But this doesn't happen if I don't take that first step and enter wrestling school. And I remember that was one of the scariest things that I ever did in my life, because I loved wrestling so much. I remember there was this overwhelming fear that I said to myself, what if I enter the school and I am terrible at wrestling? And what if I'm so bad that it changes the way I feel about wrestling? This thing that had, in a lot of ways, always been my guiding light and kept me so positive. Like, what if I do this and I'm terrible, and it just changes the whole aura and the whole passion that I have for it? Like, what do I have left at this point? But I didn't realize it then, but I know it now. The first step towards any dream is the most difficult one. And I'm not saying that it ever gets easier, but if you take that first step, the path never gets any harder than that first step. And I think that's the hardest thing that any person with a dream has to do is take that first step, because you hear the naysayers and the people that tell you you can't do it. But if you could take that first step, it's possible to do pretty much anything. In my mind, you know, you could, if you have the courage to follow your dream, that's something a lot of people will never ever do. I guess to summarize it, take the first step. Take the step.
As well as three wrestling matches on the island, I like to spring this upon thee. You're allowed to take with you a movie, an album, and a luxury item. So, off the top of your head, if I was to say to you, you can choose a movie to take with you on the island, what movie would it be?
Can it be a DVD with two movies on it?
Yeah, go on then, that's fine. As long as it's one of those reversible DVDs from the mid-noughties.
Because two of my favorite movies that I can watch repeatedly, that I watched millions of times as a kid, and I might get a lot of flack for this first one, Billy Madison with Adam Sandler. I used to watch that movie all the time. And if I could flip the disc over, Wayne's World 1, the original Wayne's World, because it's just classic and all the bits in it are great. And yeah, I watched those movies thousands of times as kids, like right after school. And I feel like they stand the test of time. Adam Sandler admittedly has gone very much downhill since Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore and those movies from the 90s. But I think Billy Madison is a tried and true classic. As far as an album, something more current that I'm listening to all the time, I'm a really big fan of these guys, State Champs out of the Buffalo, New York area. And they're a little bit more of a sad boy type band, but with some upbeat lyrics and pop punk and young Greg would be very mad at me for choosing a band like this. But, you know, I don't want to hang on to all that angst and animosity that I had as a kid at all times. It's nice to go back to that and be able to channel that, especially when it comes to promos or working out, to go back to, like, I don't know, Disturbed or Drowning Pool. But as an adult man, I don't want to feel all that anger at all times. So I think if I can listen to some State Champs with a couple little acoustic tracks thrown in there, that'd be really cool. As far as a luxury item,
So I'll give you a few examples of what people have given in the past. Colt Cabana's taking a B-Day. I guess he wants to keep that area clean. Nick Aldis is taking a Jaguar. He's taking his car. James Storm's taking toilet paper. There's a lot of arse-related luxury items. It doesn't have to be so. What else is everybody else taking? Alison Kay's taking her cats. We don't normally smuggle livestock in, but on this occasion we are. There's quite a broad spectrum. David Starr's taking a body pillow. Who else is taking a bed? Somebody else is taking a bed. But yeah, so it's a very broad spectrum.
Jeez, it's so difficult. Because like I'm thinking about, it's like, well, what would I need in that moment? But I feel like you don't really appreciate it until it's gone, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, yeah, I feel like at least, because I mean, if how am I going to smuggle a whole bed? But I feel like
we'll worry about that.
Pillow and blanket would be nice, because if I'm gonna stay on this island for the rest of my life, I want to be at least somewhat comfortable. I imagine sleeping on the ground every night is going to be pretty difficult. So well, geez, now that I think about it, I don't know. Does my glasses count? Because if I don't have my glasses,
you can wear them. That's fine. We're not going to take your glasses off you and put you on the island. That's just cruel.
Okay. I don't know if you were a fan of the Twilight Zone, but I in that moment I just started thinking about there's an episode of Twilight Zone where there's a dude with his glasses and all he wants to do is read books, and his wife gets all upset with him, and so eventually something happens where the world ends up ending and no one else exists except for him. So he's like, oh, now I have all this time to read all these books, and this would be the story of my life. He sits down at the library to read these books, he's sitting on the steps, and then his glasses fall off and his glasses break, and now he's stuck, no one left in the world, he has all this time to read these books, and now his glasses are broken, so he's screwed. So I just think myself, like, oh yeah, I'd be on this island, like, no one bother me, I could watch my favorite movie over and over again, and then my glasses would fall off and I would break, or I just wouldn't have them at all, and I'd be like, well, I didn't think about this sucks, because I am blind as a bat.
What's your third and final match, Greg?
I feel like if I pick another WrestleMania, I'm going to feel so generic, but I feel like I
can worry about it. You're all right.
Okay. Another great, I love matches that tell stories, you can look back on, and like, you, especially as a wrestler, I appreciate it so much more. Just the beats of the matches. Like, there were so many matches that I watched as a kid that once I became a wrestler, you go back and watch them, and you can watch them with this whole new set of eyes and have this deeper appreciation for it. And one match that always stuck out to me was from WrestleMania 8, which was Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper. And I think that stuck out to me because Piper did not have very many technical masterpieces. I'm sure you know this, but you go back and watch that match from WrestleMania 8, it's the best wrestling match I've ever seen Piper in, far and away. And the story they told that with that match was this, there's these two baby faces, friends, known each other for a long time, and now they have to battle over this Intercontinental title. It was one of those situations where it was like, I don't care if you're my friend, when it comes time for this match, you know, we're going to go to war. And they did a bunch of cool promos to set it up, even the pre-match promo.
This is the first time these two men are meeting for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title. Champion Rowdy Piper,
yeah!
His opponent, a former IC champion himself, number one contender, Bret the Hitman Hart. You know, gentlemen, we have arrived.
We have arrived. You know, I got to say, first of all, man, I got to tell you how much I love your family. I got to tell you how much I love your mom. I know this guy since he's been knee high to a grasshopper. No, I remember when they were changing your potty pants. I remember even when, of course, you weren't potty trained till he was 7. But everybody's got their problem. Remember tying bows in our shoes when we were kids? Yeah, of course, your shoes were always tied together. Doesn't matter to me, because I remember when Mrs. Hart used to come down, man. She used to make them sandwiches, man. Throw on that bologna. Of course, only one piece of bologna, but that don't matter. I was hungry. Then she'd come up and she'd go to her nose. What
keep
is
your
this?
To yourself.
Oh, keep my. Oh, this is nice, huh? Here I am having a little fun trying to make you at ease. Gonna have a nice con to keep them to yourself. Have a nice contest, and here you want to be a hero all of a sudden, huh? You want to be a hot shot all of a sudden. You want your belt all of a sudden. Is that the idea, huh?
Look, all I care about is one thing. I want to win back the Intercontinental belt. You got it. I'm gonna take it. That's
you right. Keep your hands to yourself. Let me help you out a little bit, buddy. We can settle
right
argument.
You know.
Oh, yeah, you damn betcha we can.
Right here,
that, why do it here when I can have a million people watch me rip your head off?
Would have had you.
No, you wouldn't have.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Bret Hart on
bye-bye.
His way to the ring.
Bye-bye.
This should be a classic, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think so.
Roddy Piper defending
not
against
today.
The challenger. Let's get back to ringside.
She be mine. Please.
The whole time the promo's happening, like, you don't notice it, but he's got his hand in his kilt, and Bret grabs him and goes, I could have had you. And he goes, no, you couldn't. And he pulls the belt out of his kilt, and he's going to punch him in the face with it. And they do the match, and they do this back and forth babyface situation where Bret powders Piper out of the ring, holds the rope open for him. Piper powders Bret out of the ring, holds the rope open. And then where the match kicks off is Piper kind of almost goes back to his old ways. He lets him in the ring. Good show of sportsmanship. And it's a little subtle thing where he points to Bret's boot, your shoe's untied, and Bret bends down, and then Piper just uppercuts him in the face while he's bent down. And that shot is what busts Bret open, and he starts bleeding. And again, we talked about it with Austin and Bret. The blood thing wasn't supposed to happen between Bret and Piper, but it was one of those things where Bret thought it would help for the match. And so he subtly bladed himself, and in the end, he ended up getting away with it, and Vince in the back really thought that Bret had been busted open hard way. Meanwhile, later on the show, Ric Flair and Macho Man had the same idea. Ric Flair tries to claim it's hard way, but blatantly on camera, he's cutting himself with razor blade. So Bret bends over, he gets that uppercut in the face, and that now the animosity is picked up, and like there's this real violent nature of the match that begins. And we think that Piper might revert back to his old ways. And at some point they do a spot where, you know, whip reversal into the referee's knocked down. And then, you know, Piper has this moment. Do I go out and do I go back to my rule breaking ways? So he grabs the ring bell and Bobby Heenan, which, you know, can't be, you can't ignore what commentators add to matches, and it was no different in this situation with Monsoon and Heenan. Heenan on commentary going, you know, what the hell, use the bell. Piper's having this moment where he's contemplating it, and then he drops the bell and he doesn't use it. And it was the worst decision he could have made. He locks on the sleeper hold, and Bret does that counter, which is the same counter he uses at Survivor Series 96 with Austin in their first big-time match. He kicks his legs up the rope, kicks him back, and pins Piper for the 1-2-3, and then they have this embrace after the match. And it almost felt like, in a lot of ways, it was Piper's endorsement to Bret to kind of say, like, you know, I never lose to anybody. I lost to you. Maybe there's potential for you to be the next guy, you know, when it comes to like main eventing shows and stuff. And I thought that was a really powerful moment.
And what I love is, and what I've loved about the last few minutes is, you remember that match beat for beat.
Yeah.
So it's obviously stuck with you. Like, that's
for sure.
Powerful storytelling, that is. But it was, you're right with, like, for me, the thing is, you had Bret Hart, who was this amazing wrestler, and you had Roddy Piper, who was just this incredible talker. So the whole package of Piper going, I'll lead the pre-match promo, and then Bret going, I'll lead the wrestling match, and it's perfect. Is there something that you took away from that match that maybe you still even use to this day?
You know, when I have to do a babyface match, there's so many times that I take that story arc of good guy, wrestle, something to the floor. I'll help you in, buddy. Good guy, wrestle, something to the floor the other way. And then I'll try to do some sort of transition where one of the baby faces doesn't necessarily turn heel, much like Piper. They just kind of become the aggressor. And I always feel like, because I think a lot of guys go into these good guy matches and think like, oh, well, how are we going to do this match? It's going to be difficult. Like, it's almost like, I think the guys have the same attitude when you go into a triple threat match, because, you know, triple threat matches are hard to do, right? But if you pick the right structure, it makes it a lot easier. So I feel like, in terms of like baby, to kind of loosely go off of Brett and Piper from WrestleMania 8 always helps really well, because like someone doesn't have to turn bad in the match, but someone definitely has to be the aggressor and put on the heat, if you will, in terms of storytelling. It's no different in a triple threat match. I always tell guys the format that I use for a triple threat match, which ironically is another one of my favorite matches, but I think it has the best structure in terms of building a triple threat match from the ground up. Chris Benoit, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 20. If you go back and watch that triple threat match, it's not one of those situations where most triple threat matches have a guy laying on the floor while two guys run a bunch of spots, and then something happens and another guy comes in and now we run a bunch of spots. Like, the pace of the match is constant. Like, someone gets taken out, one spot gets run, and then somehow the spot comes to the end very quickly, or the guy that went to the floor somehow does something to be intertwined into the spot to take another guy out to then set up another spot. It's nonstop if you go back and watch that match. And I think when I take that template for that triple threat match from WrestleMania 20, it makes building a triple threat match fun, which is hard to do because it's a difficult concept. And I think it's no different with the babyface thing. So that's what sticks to me about the Piper Brett match, is just that structure, because it's helped me so much as a performer.
Three amazing matches for your DVD. This has been an absolute blast to chat wrestling with you, Gregor. I know it's taken us a while to sit down and do it, but we finally got there and it's been worth every minute. Is there anything like this? The floor is yours now. Is there anything that you want to plug and shout about? Now is your time to do it, sir.
Well, as we mentioned, I do have the podcast Iron on Wrestling, which I drop every Wednesday. And I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel with a pro wrestling podcast, but I do think I offer a lot of good content. And I'm actually starting to do stuff with Patreon now, patreon.com/irononwrestling, where I'm trying to offer bonus episodes, audio and video content. And you can get all that for just as little as $5 a month, which I think is a great deal. And I'm, you know, with bonus episodes, I'm not like trying to be cheap about it. I'm trying to give you some extra hour bonus episodes. And the regular podcast in general, you know, we do around 2 hours every episode. So it's something that you can sit down and spread out over a couple of days if you want to. And I think we're putting out some good content, so I think you'll really enjoy that. And in general, you can find me on social media, on Twitter at Gregory Iron, on Instagram at Gregory_Iron. I'm on Facebook as well. And if you can't remember any of that, just go to my website, gregory-iron.com, where you can book me for pro wrestling and or speaking engagements. And of course, if you'd like the merchandise, prowrestlingtees.com/GregoryIron. I got old shirts that I'll never print again, and new shirts, stuff that you can wear in public, you know, and not be ashamed of.
There's a whole era where it was like a guy with no shirt on walking through town is quite a difficult thing to explain to non-wrestling fans. Gregory, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.